The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
I also meditate because that really helps with mental focus. It helps to turn down the volume on that inner critic. You know, it's like a drill instructor saying, you know, you maggot, you can't do this. And, you know, everybody has that voice. And sometimes it's the voice of your mean grandmother, or sometimes it's your drill instructor, or I don't know, it's your priest who, you know, thinks you're sinful, or whatever form that voice takes, right?
Sure.
Greetings, scribes, and welcome back to The Writer Files. I am your grateful host, Kelton Reed, sending you positivity, productivity, and prosperity per usual. I just want to kick off the show by saying thank you for sticking with us through these uncertain times of the pandemic. I have some big guests and some big news on the horizon for the pod, so definitely stay tuned. This week, best-selling novelist Nick Petrie spoke with me about keeping your sanity as a writer, the importance of boredom for creativity, and how to sustain a lauded thriller series. Nick's the award-winning author of the critically acclaimed Peter Ash series. His debut novel, The Drifter, won the ITW Thriller and Barry Awards and was nominated for the Edgar, Anthony, and Hammett Awards as well. He's won a 2016 Literary Award from the Wisconsin Library Association, was named one of Apple's 10 Writers to Read in 2017, and Light It Up was named the best thriller of 2018 by Apple Books and nominated for a Barry Award. His latest is The Breaker, the sixth in that award-winning series featuring Peter Ash, the war veteran struggling with PTSD, who travels the U.S. stumbling into mysteries that only a man with his unique skill set can solve. The number one New York Times bestselling author C.J. Box said of the book, "Nonstop action at a machine gun pace. If you're not reading Nick Petrie, now's the time to start." In this file, Nick and I discussed his 25-year overnight success, the challenges of running a business and writing a book a year, how to keep the faith, the rituals and routines that keep him going, William Gibson's genius, and more. Stay calm and write on. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published, and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. Yes, we are back on The Writer Files. I am thrilled today to be joined by special guest and best-selling author Nick Petrie. How are you today, Nick?
I'm great, thanks. How's your day going?
You know, I'm surviving here in the wilds of Denver, Colorado. Actually, it's not wilderness at all. I'm right in the middle of the city. But how are you surviving this very awkward time in history?
It sure is awkward, isn't it? I have a whole suite of things that I do to keep my sanity. All the things that I try to do, the things that one is supposed to do. So I try to get some exercise every day. I try to spend time talking with my sweetie who I live with, and with, you know, friends who I don't live with. I'm on the phone a fair amount with my extended family. It's just all that stuff to try to keep your head straight.
Imagine. We talked a little bit earlier about how the sausage is made over there, and I understand you're a little bit of a Luddite, but... I can't wait to talk about your creative process in the latest installment in the Peter Ash series. But let's kind of roll back the clock a little bit, as we do with so many renowned authors, and just talk about your superhero origin story. Take us back a little bit, because I understand it's been a winding road, as it is with so many writers. Just talk about your winding path to best-selling author and kind of where you were a decade ago.
Well, a friend of mine refers to me as the 25-year overnight success.
Right.
And I think that's really true. So I got my undergraduate degree in creative writing and American culture, and it's the sort of thing that nobody ever thinks they will use in their daily life. And it's now the thing I do for a living, is I write for a living, and I write about American culture as it applies to this crime series. Mm-hmm. But you know, I wrote three novels. I couldn't get published. It took me 25 years to get to the point where I wrote my first novel called The Drifter, which I had given up. I had sort of decided that, you know, I'm just going to write the book that I want to see and I want to read. And I wrote a book about veterans, and I wrote a book where I could talk about my rage at the economic crash of, 2008 and, the housing crisis the greed of the people who had put us there. And I sort of somehow managed to roll that all into a book. And I hadn't been able to find an agent for my first book. I found a not very good agent for my second book. For my third book, I found a really good agent, but she couldn't sell it because, you know, the crash happened basically right as I was doing the revisions, and the editor that had expressed interest had left her job, and publishing was not going to buy anything from some schmo from Milwaukee they'd never met before. So I just said, all right, okay, fine. It's not like I'm going to stop writing. I've been doing this, you know, essentially for myself anyway, for the last 25 plus years. And so I wrote this book that I just kind of couldn't help myself from writing. And I finally sent it off to that book took me 5 years to write. And I finally sent it off to my agent, who I hadn't had any contact with since the last book had died. And I said, so my name is Nick Petrie, and I don't know if you remember me, but I have a new book. And she replied within 2 hours. She said, of course I remember you. I felt bad about how that ended up with you. And, you know, don't send me the first 50 pages, send me the whole manuscript. And then 2 hours later, she called me to say, well, boy, I sure hope, you know, you still think I'm your agent, because I can sell the hell out of this book.
Yeah.
Putnam bought that book, and they bought the next book in a series. I hadn't really planned it as a series, but that's how they saw it. And I really liked the characters, and it wasn't any more challenging to write this book than it was to write any other book. And they said, well, we want to see the next book in a year. And my wife, who's a great booster and a wonderful human being, she's much more of an optimist than I am. She said, just tell them yes. Just say yes.
Sure.
Which is great advice, right?
So
I said, yeah, sure, I can do that. Oh, all right, you bet. Yeah, I can do that. And somehow I did.
Huh.
And they read my draft. And even before I got revisions back, they said, yeah, we want two more.
Wow.
And maybe the fourth one will be a standalone, and maybe it won't. So then I wrote the third in the series. And then when it came time to talk about the fourth book, they said, no, these you're really gaining traction. We want to see another one. And then before I even turned in the fourth one, I had a contract for 5, 6, and 7. And that was the contract that actually paid enough for me to, and I've been running a business this whole time, right? So I've been self-employed as a carpenter and a contractor, and then as a freelance building inspector. So I was the guy that you hired to tell you what was wrong with your house when you bought a house.
Yeah.
And I was going kind of crazy writing a book a year and running a business. And it was not good for my marriage. It was not good for my health. I had a teenage son who I was not seeing as much as I wanted to see. And I said, look, here's the deal. Either I have to go to a book every other year, because this is kind of killing me, or else you have to pay me enough to shutter my own business. And so they finally, you know, that was kind of the agreement we came to. And, that was 3 years ago now.
Amazing.
It's been an adventure.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's a great story. And, you know, obviously it's a kind of a testament to just keeping going.
I think that's the real secret.
Yeah.
Writing is not something, I mean, there are a few people who seem to come from the womb with the ability to tell a story, the ability to put sentences together, but I sure didn't, you know, emerge that way. And I think most writers, it takes a couple runs. You know, I thought there was something wrong with me, that I was like a remedial guy, because it took me, you know, my fourth book to get published. And, you know, since I've been in this world a bit, that's actually a much more common story. I know a woman, it was her 12th book. I mean, talk about persistence.
Yeah. So it's that stamina that's required to kind of maintain the, Or just keep the faith, I guess. And,
that is my daily mantra, is keep the faith.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you do have to, it's a ridiculous thing to expect that you have the ability to tell a story, you know, that other people, let alone as many people as are reading these books, for God's sake, you know, find to be compelling and entertaining, to keep them turning the pages and showing up to read the next one. It's a ridiculous thing to hope for. But you kind of have to have that in you. Yeah. And some days I have to sort of shoehorn that in me. Sometimes it's harder to keep the faith than others.
Right, right. Talk about the importance of coffee to the process.
coffee is really the only remaining drug in my life, unfortunately. And has been for a while. I did go to college, so maybe I'll just leave it at that. You know, coffee is a stimulant, and it's a mental stimulant, and it's how I start my day. My day begins. I'm in my early 50s, and I basically did physical labor for most of my adult life. So my body hurts all the time. So I wake up and I do some stretching to kind of loosen things up. Yeah. And then I also meditate, because that really helps with mental focus. It helps to turn down the volume on that inner critic. You know, it's like a drill instructor saying, you know, you maggot, you can't do this. And, you know, everybody has that voice. And sometimes it's the voice of your mean grandmother, or sometimes it's your drill instructor, or I don't know, it's your priest who, you know, thinks you're sinful, or whatever form that voice takes. Right.
Sure.
And then I make some breakfast and a cup of coffee, and I carry the whole thing upstairs to my office. And that's what gets my day starting. And as I start to drink that first cup of coffee, the world sort of, you know, turns from black and white into color.
I like that. Well, let's talk about the process for the latest, which number one New York Times bestselling author C.J. Box called Nonstop Action at a Machine Gun Pace. It does suck you in, and Peter Ash, of course, tangles with dangerous enemies and terrifying technology in the newest thriller from bestselling author Nick Petrie. And so talk a little bit about, you talked some about the kind of the rip from the headline stuff, but talk maybe a little bit about how the sixth in the series differs some from the others. Obviously, it's set in a little bit different setting there. Talk about that.
Well, so the every book in the series is set in a different place, and I'm interested in place, and place essentially serves as a character for me, and every location, you know, it is instrumental in the story I end up telling. Light It Up, which is set in Colorado, it really kind of ends up being kind of a Western in a certain way. And in this book, it's my first book that takes place in the same city. So this is also a Milwaukee book, but it's a different version of Milwaukee. So the first book is Milwaukee as an economically challenged Rust Belt city that is really suffering from the crash of 2008, 2009, 2010, and the housing crisis and all of that. Veterans coming home from the surge, and the Milwaukee of the Breaker is really Milwaukee as a manufacturing town. Milwaukee's nickname for decades was the machine shop to the world. Milwaukee made the machines that made things. And we have this highly skilled workforce of you know, welders and machinists, and it's really a kind of an amazing city. But manufacturing has changed, and Milwaukee is trying to change along with it. And so I wanted to kind of look at the world of people who make physical things and people who are inventing things in the physical world. And that's a different sort of setting than I've used before, for sure. And this is also a book about advanced technology. And it's something that I've always been interested in. And there's a little bit of that in my second novel, Burning Bright. But, you know, I was really, I've really been interested in this idea that the big tech companies, you know, there are, you know, a few hundred people who are really making these enormous decisions based on their own personal self-interest or their own viewpoint of the world, which is really unlike, you know, these are billionaires who are making choices for the rest of the world. And I was interested in seeing what that might look like a little more close up and how that might play out in the physical world. So that's really kind of my entry point to this book and what I was thinking about. Although it doesn't start that way. It starts with our hero Peter and his girlfriend June and Peter's friend Louis getting coffee outside the Milwaukee Public Market and watching a man with an assault rifle under his jacket walking into the market. And they have to do something about it.
As I said, kind of some of that rip from the headline stuff. Obviously, it's a very interesting time in history for big tech, which will kind of be more prominent as we move into 2021, just because of their enormous amount of kind of sway on the culture, right? But not to detract from the plot of the book, which is thrilling and, of course, sucks you in, I mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah, current events is a total minefield and is also adding to my general anxiety level.
Oh, my gosh.
I try hard to really dial down my news use. I'm a lot more on social media now because this book launches today as we're recording this. But, I try to dial that back, too, because it's just so easy to fall down that rabbit hole of, doom scrolling and the world is falling apart. And I don't think that's really true. But it's easy to feel that way. And it takes an effort to remind yourself that we are stronger than we think and that we are capable of solving our problems and that we can all, eventually we will come together and do the right thing.
For sure. For sure. Well, talk a little bit about, kind of in the creative process, as you mentioned, kind of dialing down the inner critic and also limiting the doom scrolling, which is hard to do right now.
Oh yeah,
For all of us. But yeah, so many, I think, famous writers from antiquity have used kind of walking as a method of, talk some about, maybe it's the importance of boredom for creativity or some about just kind of your creative process.
Well, actually, I think both of those are really important. Both the walking and the boredom. One of the things that I find is that when I'm having trouble writing, one of the things is when I wake up in the morning, I try to do no podcast, although I'm a giant podcast fan. But I try to do no podcast, no social media, no news, no email, really until the end of the day, if I can. And so I go through my little morning routine and ritual and I get to my desk. I've actually got an internet blocker on my computer. So I can't get on the internet until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I think allowing the mind to wander is really important. And that's a key piece of my ritual to finding my way back into the book. And I try to get to the book as quickly as I can. I ideally it would be 15 minutes or 10 minutes, but unfortunately I can't quite do it that quickly. I've tried. And I use walking a lot as if I'm stuck on something. I pull on my boots and I go wander and if it's in the middle of the day, I'm really kind of actively thinking about how to solve a problem. And I think your brain works differently when you're in motion than it does when you're parked at your desk. I also often will go for another walk after dinner. And that's when I allow myself to listen to a podcast or to listen to music. And I try not to think consciously about the problem, but I try to sort of say to my subconscious, okay, here's the challenge for tomorrow. So you work at that, and I'm gonna go for a walk, and I'm gonna listen to, I'm gonna listen to Kelton Reed. I'm gonna listen to, Fresh Air. I'm gonna listen to one of my favorite podcasts, and learn something about the world.
Yeah, I love that. It's you're kind of tapping into that default mode network, which is a neurobiological thing, right?
And it's, absolutely.
Yeah. And the creative process is just known as the incubation phase. But yeah, your brain is absolutely doing that work for you. I love that. Setting a conscious making it a conscious decision to give your brain that background noise while you focus on other things is great. And I think that's why hobbies are so important, right?
Yeah, they are. And actually that's a problem I'm having because I wrote for years and years. And writing was my passion and my hobby. I ran a business and I've been very interested in houses and how houses work. I've renovated a couple of houses with my wife. So that's great fun for me. But, and writing was always kind of my secret personal hobby. And when it became my living, I suddenly realized that I don't have any hobbies anymore. And so I'm trying to figure out how to, you know, how to get a little bit more life back. Because writing a book a year, I'm not a super speedy writer. So it's a big challenge for me to get that much work done in a year. And so I'm trying to figure out how to have a little more space in my life for something else, because I think you're absolutely right. It's important to have a life for one thing. And if all I do is read and write, I mean, these are my favorite things, but there's gotta be something else. And that's another hard thing about the pandemic is I can't go out and explore the world in the same way I used to.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yep. Yeah. Let's turn, I guess, toward kind of, before we wrap up here, maybe a couple fun ones. I know you've mentioned some of your favorite authors. You've mentioned Cormac McCarthy, of course, one of my favorites, and Elmore Leonard. Do you have any authors that you're enjoying right now that are kind of on your nightstand or that you're returning to during the pandemic?
Mark Graney, who writes the Gray Man series. Mm-hmm. I want to read a series in order, and the exception was with Mark, because when I met him and we did an event together, I hadn't read his early stuff. So I ran into him at, I think, book 7 mm-hmm. or book 8. Mm-hmm. So I've been kind of going back and forth with him, which is kind of weird, but it's also, as a writer, it's really interesting to see how another writer assembles that sort of the path of a series. And Mark and I kind of do different things. Mark writes these kind of assassin set / spy books, and they're very kinetic, not a huge amount of internal life necessarily, a lot of action. It's like reading an action movie, essentially. And mm-hmm. they're so engaging and so entertaining. And so there are very few authors now where I can just lay on the couch for a couple of hours and lose myself in a book, because that writer muscle is always on. That's one of the fallout problems of writing full time, is it's reading becomes work in a way.
Right.
So to find somebody like Mark Graney or Greg Hurwitz, who I can just fall into, it is such a joy and is such a blessing, where, you know, they are so good at what they do that I stop, you know, writing, and I could just be a reader again, which is wonderful.
That's cool.
I'm trying to think about what are my other regulars. I've been reading more science fiction.
Oh,
because this book has a little bit of a science fiction element to it.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's easier actually for me to fall into sci-fi, because it's the tropes are different, or can be different, than with crime fiction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you open with one of my favorite quotes of all time from William Gibson.
That's right.
I love that quote.
I reread Neuromancer, his first novel, and I've read that, I don't know how many times, 6 or 7 probably. I'm a big rereader. Yeah. And I was so struck at how prescient he was. That book, I think, came out in 84.
Yep.
Or even 82, and he's basically imagined our present day internet. He coined the term cyberspace. Right. He's a brilliant guy. There's also a wonderful book that's kind of a time travel book by a guy named Tom Sweterlich, called The Gone World, which, again, the prose is beautiful. It's beautifully told. It's a twisty plot that is, I think, just perfectly executed. So if you're a sci-fi fan, I would not miss that one.
Cool. Look at that one. I was going to mention just about Neuromancer why it's such a fantastic book. Kind of one of the bedrocks of that genre is that it's also a heist story.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's just crazy to think that he did all that in one. Okay. Well, we got to wrap. I know you don't have a lot of time and you're on virtual tour, which must be very interesting. I could pick your brain all day, but I think we'll wrap up with your advice to your fellow scribes here. As I mentioned one more time, of course, we'll point at your home base there, nickpetrie.com. I'll drop links to everything in the book. The 6th installment of the Peter Ash series is The Breaker. Congrats on the work, man. So is there anywhere else you want me to point at before we wrap up with your last pearl of wisdom?
Well, you could find me on Twitter and Facebook as well. Yeah. If you want to have a conversation. I don't know, you know, the thing I keep coming back to are I got so much encouragement as a young new writer, and I still need encouragement today. So my advice to writers, whether you're, you haven't been published or you've just been published, or I had a conversation with a guy he's on his seventh book and he still is discouraged on a regular basis, is don't give up, keep going. And it's, you know, perseverance is all. It's just keep showing up and do a little bit of work and trust yourself and keep the faith.
Yeah, man. True words of wisdom. Sir, we will let you go, but congrats on all of your successes and do come back and visit us again.
Oh, I'd love to. And thanks so much for the conversation. You had great questions and I really appreciate this. Thank you.
My pleasure. I'll let you go. I know you gotta get moving, but hopefully
I got
wrap again.
11 interviews
is that
today.
All?
So.
Okay. Take care, my friends. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm. And you can chat with me on Twitter at Kelton Reed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.